gotta stop that right there. I'm just gonna let the whole thing play. Man, I'm not a big fan of top 40 music and stuff, but if that song doesn't put a smile on your face, I don't know what will. I can't hide my mood this morning, folks. I'm in a good one. The rankings are finally up. You know, I was going to post them like 2 weeks ago, but I was still grinding and I was still working on some things, and eventually get to a point where it's like they're changing too fast to post, but I need to get them up. So they're up, but they're going to change a lot in the coming weeks. As I mentioned in the article, today's rankings are probably 85% a reflection of my grades. And now I start moving things around. I start looking at projected games missed and stuff like that. And I start looking within each offense. And I start looking at projections, but then also probabilities and confidence level and projections. And you know, the way I want to draft and how the board shakes out, scarcity, things like that. They're going to move players up and down the board a little bit. So that's going to start happening in the next really week. It's exciting. This is the time of year. I just love it, man, because it, you know, my competitive juices are flowing. I'm looking to gain an advantage and hopefully gain some advantages for all of my readers and listeners and all that good stuff. So today's podcast hopefully is not going to be real long. I don't have a lot of time. There will be a little bit of a, you know, normally I do very little editing on the pod, oftentimes like literally no editing whatsoever. People out there going, yeah, Pete, we know. I will be doing some pausing and restarting today simply because it's already 88 degrees up in the Rotobahn Crow's Nest. So I'm going to have to sort of pause, run the AC for 5-10 minutes, and then record and go through that. So this probably be about a 40-minute podcast, give or take. It's going to probably take me a good hour or so to actually record it, though. So, you know, apologies if they're a hard stop here or there, once I'm doing like, you know, the Robert Hayes sweat pouring down my face, I can't have my microphone with sweat on it. They cost too much money. So, you know, just pre-apologies if that happens a couple times. And before we really kick into the rankings here, this is, again, I'm feeling happy. It's a celebratory podcast. But two things, and you guys know me, I do not hammer you, you know, with stuff outside of the realm of actually winning and ranking and reading. And most of what this site is, it's getting smart and getting smart fast, hopefully. But there are bills to pay. And every now and again, I'm just going to remind you guys, there's a donate button now. I put it up very late last year. If you're a longtime Rotobahn reader and you've never contributed to the site, you know, please consider doing so if you're liquid enough. Your contributions will keep this site up. Period. So please consider giving to the site. It's not money that's going to go directly into my pocket. Well, maybe, who knows, but believe me, you know, if I'm getting a little something from the site, it's going to help me continue with the site. So please, if we've gotten it done for you in the past, consider helping us out. For all you newbies, my general mode of operation is, you know, we sort of work for tips. So I'm not looking for people who've never experienced Rotobahn to contribute to the site. I mean, if you want to, God bless you. But, you know, our attitude is we'll prove it to you. And once we do, hook us up on the back end. You know, there's a million and one sites out there asking you for $40, $80, $100, $200. Some of them are more. You know, and to me, plunking that down before you really know what you're getting can be a little frustrating. With us, use the product, enjoy the product, win with the product, make a little money with the product, and then when all is said and done, just like you would after having a good meal, you know, take care of the people who took care of you. That's the philosophy we're running on here, and, you know, please consider helping us out. The other thing, and believe me, long wind up here, but this is not something I'm going to hammer at the beginning and end of each podcast. You know, we're going to make this quick for the most part. But now that I'm up on all the platforms, for those of you, no matter what platform you're on, but particularly iTunes, if you know where you see the opportunity to like the podcast, please do, and please leave a review. It really matters. I wish it didn't. It probably shouldn't, to be honest. But it has a lot to do with where you fall in the iTunes world. So please, for the next 2 weeks, if you can, drop a rating and a review. And be honest, I'm not I'm not demanding great reviews or even asking for them. Just leave honest reviews. I'll read them, and you know, for the ones that are negative, I will, you know, try to do what I can to improve. Okay, we're 6 minutes in, and now we're really going to turn into the rankings. And really what we're getting into here is the things that I've left comments on in these initial rankings, the top 36 players. Just going to have some fun and walk through this and hopefully make this a fairly short podcast. We've got good stuff coming up. I'm planning on getting Sigmund Bloom on next week, my good friend and often partner in crime. And I really can't wait to see what Sigmund has to say about this year's drafting pool. He's always got something original. And then after Sigmund, I'm looking to get Elliot Crist on and some other people. So it's going to be a good August. It's really exciting for me that I've got everything back up and running and I can really do the podcast as I want to. Hopefully you guys experience it in that way. Okay, so let's dig in and let's start talking top 36. So let's kick off, you know, with the really obvious stuff first. My top four is the same as really, I think, everybody else's top four. And, you know, it really doesn't matter to me one bit who you decide to take at the one spot. I think really all four guys are viable there. We're talking about Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, Alvin Kamara, and Zeke Elliott. Each person brings sort of their own special weakness to the table. In McCaffrey's case, we're wondering, you know, how durable will he prove to be? Although, you know, if last year is any indication, he's a pretty darn safe fantasy play. Saquon Barkley, obviously, almost everything pointing in the right direction, with the exception of his team. Lack of Odell Beckham could mean, well, almost definitely will mean more people up in the line of scrimmage. It should be tougher sledding for Barkley, but there is no player with more locked-in volume. And while a lot of people have brought up the David Johnson debacle of last year, and certainly that's something to think about, really, with any elite running back, like, could a David Johnson thing happen? It's a good question to ask, but in this scenario, I just don't see that many commonalities. Bad team, yeah, but we don't have a new coaching staff, which was a big problem for Johnson. And not just new, it was a massive downgrade. You know, from Arians to last year's nonsense is just like, you don't get much of a bigger downgrade. So that was huge. In Barkley's case, there's no downgrade at all. In fact, the offensive line's probably a tick better. But the paradigm that they'll play under is going to be a little different because defenses are going to be targeting Barkley more than they did last year because instead of having one guy who tilts the field, instead of having two guys who tilt the field, we only have one. When it comes to Kamara, I think there's a volume ceiling. There is going to be a second back here more so than you would see with McCaffrey or Barkley or Zeke Elliott, who we're about to get to. So that is a negative factor for Kamara. Now, there's a positive element to it as well. He tends to not get overworked. We feel good about him staying healthy. But, you know, in terms of him getting like a 90% volume thing and full share of the goal line, that's probably not going to happen, okay? So there is a slight limitation on Kamara, but part of that is made up for by the fact that he is in an established great offense, and that offense is leaning more towards short passing and running. So Kamara, to me, has a really strong floor, but the ceiling isn't as high as it could be if they weren't so committed to using a second back. Still, though, he's so good. The offense is so good. It fits so well to fantasy scoring because we're generally dealing with half or full PPR. So Kamara's an elite player. He's that rare person who we would put up in the elite area who doesn't have an elite workload, you know, maybe a near elite workload. Okay, now down to Elliott, who's the last guy in the tier right now, and quite frankly is a guy I'm not drafting right now. I may move Elliott down in subsequent rankings if this thing gets ugly. My feeling is that Dallas has been so committed to Elliott over the years, it would be sort of silly for them to pull back now when they're on the precipice of success. It just doesn't make any sense. I think Elliott's people are really just going tactically here. If this year doesn't go well enough, they don't want Elliott to be the guy who doesn't get paid, and I understand that. But by the other, you know, the other side of the coin is, Elliott was drafted high by this team. This team has stuck with him through a lot of bullshit, and you know, bullshit that, you know, we can say Roger Goodell wasn't fair, But it's not like Elliott was innocent, okay? So this is a player, in my opinion, who probably shouldn't hold out, because he should be thankful to this team for A, taking him higher than most teams would, and B, for sticking by him. So, you know, the fact that they're interested in paying him at all, I think he should be happy. And, you know, so where with Melvin Gordon, I have some sympathy for the player. In Zeke's case, he's been getting paid elite all the way along. He hasn't been ripped out of any money. He's been getting fair compensation. So I appreciate that the running back position sucks for anyone who plays it in terms of getting paid. But Elliott is not one of the sympathetic running backs. Let's be honest about that. But for now, he's in the four spot. The second he signs, he becomes viable at the top spot, particularly in non-full PPR scoring. But after what he did as a receiver last year, and, you know, dust off my shoulder here, Rotobon predicted it. Obviously, he is a big factor now in the passing game and not a downgrade in full PPR. But when we compare him to McCaffrey, who we expect to maybe catch 100 balls, you know, I can see why McCaffrey might go ahead of Zeke in full PPR. Now, next guy up is sort of in his own tier, because I'm not willing to go receiver until he's off the board. It's David Johnson. Obviously, last year, fresh in our memory, we know that there are ways this guy could go south. We do have a new scheme. We don't know exactly what it's going to look like. We know it's going to be aggressive. We know they're going to want to throw. But we're not 100% sure what the NFL version, you know, of this air raid scheme, what it's going to look like. So we really feel good about Johnson. Johnson, we could end up lowballing him here if they really integrate him fully and make him a big factor. If Kyler is finding his running backs, God knows how good Johnson could be for fantasy. He could be RB1. I don't think there's any question that David Johnson has the ability this year to be RB1. And if you want to just put him up in that top tier, if you want to put him ahead of Zeke right now until Zeke signs, I don't have a problem with it. Next up, we're starting to get into the non-RBs. And the way I have this thing set up right now, they're sort of clustered. I may start to blend these clusters as I gain more confidence in certain players and as other players maybe start to become problematic. But at the top of this tier is Odell Beckham. I've seen Odell Beckham going in the middle of the second round. So this will make my rankings look different than probably a lot of other ones. Why do I like Odell? Well, you know, I say it in the blurb, but it's just a matter of sometimes you want to be there before it happens. Odell Beckham is probably going to have a career year this year or next year. I think it's a really good shot that he's going to have a career year this year or next year. I am not a guy who likes to bash Eli Manning. I think the guy probably takes more guff than he deserves. But let's face it, the last couple of years, Eli has been a guy who's lacked mobility and confidence. It's tough to put a veteran quarterback behind, you know, an offensive line that, you know, just leads to a freaking jailbreak, you know, every other damn play. So the Giants had a tough situation with an immobile veteran quarterback. They compounded it by allowing their line to be so bad that Eli Manning's weaknesses, you know, were the lead. You know, if you protect him, particularly on the weak side, Manning's still capable of doing some good things, or certainly was over the last couple of years. You know, is he washed now? We're going to find out. But the bottom line is, forget Eli. Beckham is going to Baker Mayfield, a tremendous anticipatory thrower, a guy who is really good at finding the path of least resistance. When Beckham's open, he's going to get hit. Moreover, the field is not going to tilt to Odell the way it's done in the past. This is a team that can balance things out. Like the Giants last year, they've got a running game you either respect or you're going to get crushed by it. So Beckham, yeah, he's going to see help up top. He'll see some doubles here and there, but it's not going to be teams selling out to stop Beckham, because if they do, this team will crush them on the other side of the field and with the run game. So to me, Beckham is going to be showing us some big plays that we haven't seen before, and we're going to see them with more regularity. I'm putting him at the top of my receiver board because I feel like the floor is there with this offense and him being such a great player, and I feel like the key to major Beckham could be unlocked, and it could be unlocked this year. So the risk of taking Odell Beckham in a situation like this, I don't see as very high, and I feel of all the players who are in this range, the guy with the unexplored ceiling is Beckham or maybe Juju, okay? So that's the rationale. Now, next up is Kelce. I've got him in the 7 hole right now. I love him this year, feeling good about the ankle surgery. The thing with him is, unlike a lot of people, I feel really good about the tight end situation this year. So I'm going to be choosy as to when I decide to go with Kelce in the first round, because I'm so excited about O.J. Howard, Evan Ingram, and Hunter Henry, which form a nice little fifth-round cluster. I don't think I'm getting shut out of that cluster, so it's always there if I need it. This is going to make me a little bit choosy in terms of when I decide to go with Kelce in the first, or Kittle in the second, or Ertz in the third. I love those guys in those spots. But if there's another guy there who I feel is compelling and who helps my team, I'm going to push the tight end thing down the line a little bit and attack in the fifth round. It's really hard not to love Travis Kelce this year. Devontae Adams, look, great player, easily the number one wide receiver for a team with a Hall of Fame quarterback. The volume's there, the talent's there, the connection's there. Only injury's going to stop him. It's easy. DeAndre Hopkins, arguably could be up at the five spot, certainly will be at the lead guy in a lot of wide receiver tiers this year, and I'm fine with that. The reason I'm fading him, just, you know, we're talking about just a couple spots here, but I don't know that he's going to enjoy the kind of volume that he saw with so many injuries last year, changing tight end seemingly every week, with receivers in and out of the lineup, sometimes both out, and that just led to huge amounts of volume. So while I'm sure he'll be excellent, while I'm sure if healthy he's a wide receiver one and probably a high-end wide receiver one, I'm a little bit in favor of going Adams, Beckham, and conceivably Jones, Smith, Schuster, and Thomas ahead of Nuke. But Nuke's a first rounder. If you want to take him as the first receiver off the board, you're not going to get a passionate argument from me. It makes sense. All of these guys make sense, including the next couple. I mean, this tier is awesome. These guys are great, and they're established, and they're safe, and they have quarterbacks, okay? Next up is Julio Jones. Everything I just said applies to him. If you want to take Julio 1, I don't have a problem with that. Here's where I have him. The difference between him and Hopkins is almost nothing. The difference between him and Juju, who's coming up next, is nothing. Juju was a wide receiver 1 last year. The fear would be that a paradigm shift to being the lead guy in an offense, constantly getting help up top plus a number 1 cornerback on him, could make him less efficient. It's possible. But my guess is that the Steelers are going to move him around so much, it'll be hard for defenses to get that kind of a bead on him. I think he's a safe wide receiver 1, and I think he's got upside within that context. So I'm on Juju as a first round or early second round selection. Same basic thing goes with Michael Thomas. I think Breeze limitations and the way defenses really try to take him off the board limit him a little bit. But having said that, I think he's arguably the second or third best receiver in football with a great quarterback. So, you know, he has to be there in the first round or somewhere right around the turn. He just has to be, to me. When I see him slipping to middle, late second round, I just shake my head. It makes no sense to me. Now, we're moving into the second round, but all of these next, say, you know, 6 or 7 players, all of them have first round viability. So, you know, let's just throw that out at the drop. But now moving to the 13th position on my board, we have Mr. Nick Chubb. Now, Chubb is a tremendous back, and he's in a tremendous spot. I'm definitely tempted to move this guy up my board. It's just that the quality in front of him is so good. But if I'm looking to go running back at the turn, for me, Chubb, Connor, Mixon, Cook, these are probably the options. Gurley is still there, and I'm definitely thinking about him. I want more information before I start taking the Gurley plunge, but it's definitely something I'm considering. Le'Veon Bell is another one where I'm very open-minded to moving him up, but I sort of need some good vibes. I need to know that the Jets are feeling good about him, that he's healthy in camp, that everything looks good. Preseason may change my opinion on Bell just a tad. He could also move in the other direction. Look, he's a heck of a running back. I don't think it's fair to suddenly say he's crap just because he's on the Jets. But if you don't think losing the Pittsburgh line is going to hurt, you're nuts. If you don't think going from a veteran quarterback to a rookie quarterback is going to hurt a little bit, I think you're wrong. If you don't think that having Antonio Brown there, you know, pulling coverage and opening up ways to get Bell the ball in space, if you don't think that matters, respectfully, I think you're probably wrong. So I think Bell is moving into a situation where it's going to be tougher sledding for him. But he's still the same kind of back. He's a three-down back, pretty darn good runner, and he's an excellent receiver. So those things should play no matter where he plays. And the Jets offense, you know, my concerns more than scheme are about volume. I like the quarterback. There is some talent to throw the ball around. I don't think teams are going to be able to just load up on Bell. In fact, if I were a defense, it wouldn't be the way I would approach the Jets. So in some ways, Bell, you know, really, there's no reason why he shouldn't be your typical, solid, good three-down fantasy back if he stays healthy. I just don't think he's, you know, working under a paradigm as strong as the Pittsburgh one. The year-long layoff, I think it's going to hurt his wallet in the long run, but I don't think it's going to hurt him for fantasy this year. Mike Evans is another guy. Easily could move him up the board a little bit. Excuse me. I jumped down to Bell really quickly. I jumped over Tyreek Hill, and I jumped over James Conner and a couple other guys. Let's move back and talk about those guys for a second. First of all, Conner. You know, anybody who reads Rotobon knows I've been a big fan of Conner's for a long time now. And, you know, the injury he had last year I don't think is something that has any systemic elements to it. I think it was just a random injury. He's fine now. So to me, Conner's the lead back in Pittsburgh. He should be valued as such. But where the problem is, it's not that I think he necessarily is a huge step off of Le'Veon Bell. I think he's a slight down step. The problem is that Pittsburgh's never had a backfield with three really good running backs before. Usually behind Bell, it was something clearly downward. You know, even when it was D'Angelo Williams, who is a darn good running back, who was a darn good running back, he was the old guy who was there just in case for the most part. There is, you know, the NFL is moving in a direction where we're using more running backs. Pittsburgh now has a deep backfield where they're certainly in a position to do it. So, you know, are we going to bank on their inclination to use a single back, or are we going to look at those other two elements? To me, this could sort of go either way, and that's why I'm not leaning in fully on Conner and putting him up at, say, the 7 or 8 spot. I've got him at 14. But again, very, very little value gap between the guys at 7, 8, 9 and the guys at 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. There really just isn't much of a gap, okay? So these guys can move a lot. Some of them will. Next up is Tyreek Hill. Look, I cannot stand this guy. As a human being, I think he's just awful, okay? He's valuable, and he's probably valued somewhere from 10 to 15. I've got him at 15. The odds on him being on any of my teams are low because I don't even like saying his name. But my job is to help you win, and he can help you win, you know? Now the one thing about Hill, there's so much awful crap has happened around this guy. Who knows when something else might pop up? So there could be, depending on how you look at that, there could be some increased risk. Maybe it's something to think about. But if you want to take Tyreek Hill, I would say really anywhere from about 9 overall on, he's viable. Okay, Joe Mixon, love the player, love the talent. I think he's pretty much healthy. He got nicked up here and there last year, but I think he's generally got good health. His team's offensive line is mediocre. We've got a scheme change coming, and we've got a tough schedule. So, you know, as much as I want to jump all in on Mixon and sort of push him up to like 7, he's the best thing in his situation. Every other element doesn't necessarily work against him, but it doesn't really help him. So Mixon is sort of a talent bet. If the new scheme there, obviously Cincinnati's moving in on they're going to try to replicate the Rams scheme. If that happens and they do it well, who knows? But, you know, to me, Mixon's an elite option. He's RB1 caliber, but he's not in the elite tier within the elite backs, if you will. He's not going to be in my top 4. He's not 5. He has to fall somewhere after that. For me, I'm most comfortable early second round now. But again, this stuff is fluid. Next guy up, Dalvin Cook, I think easily can drop a mid first round performance this year. Easily. But he has to stay healthy, and he hasn't been able to do it. So he sits here. But, you know, if you want to lean in on Cook, take him at 9, 10, 11. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Gurley, we did 20 minutes on Gurley in the last podcast, but, you know, he is right where we left him. We are going to continue to grind on Gurley. We're going to take every bit of information we can. We're going to try to, you know, see through, you know, the nonsense and try to find the stuff that really matters. You know, and we'll see how everything, you know, goes going forward. My game with Gurley is to basically really be D'd up on what I think within about 11 days, which is my first major draft. Right now, you know, I've got him where I have him ranked. You know, would I lean in certain circumstances? Maybe, and go a little earlier. You know, the thing about Gurley that we have to think about is if you pass on Gurley, right, and he gets to the point where he's going to sneak to, say, the 21st overall, and now you're giving guys who already have an elite back a chance at Gurley too, whew, boy, that's tough to do. He is a guy we have to deal with, and we're going to continue to talk about him. Mike Evans in the 20 spot. I really like Mike Evans this year. I love the offense for him. He's one of two primary receivers. He's probably not going to come off the field barely ever. He's going to be like 95% or above snap rate most weeks. And he's going to probably end up playing a lot of slot with Arians, which is going to only make him more valuable in PPR leagues. Evans is looking like a really good buy at 2021 in that area. So is Antonio Brown. You know, certainly Brown's elite stuff is starting to get soft. You know, he was like wide receiver 5 last year. Now he's taking a quarterback downgrade, but the volume's going to be there. He's still a great player. And Derek Carr's a functional quarterback. You know, who knows if Gruden just can light a little bit of a fire under Carr, who knows? So, you know, Antonio Brown, I really don't have a problem with you taking him anywhere, say, from about the 6th spot on. It's up to you how you feel about him. I got him at 21, but quite frankly, it feels a little light. I could see myself sliding him up the board a little bit. Melvin Gordon's a placeholder at 22. He's moving in one direction or the other. If he signs, he moves up into the first round. If he doesn't sign, he's probably going to move into the third, late third. George Kittle, love him. Talked about the tight ends a little earlier. It's gonna be a feel thing for me, whether I choose to dip into the tight end in the first or late second, early third, or whether I wait for that little cluster that I really like with O.J. Howard, Ingram, and Hunter Henry. And really, even if somehow I miss that spot, there are people who can fix my problem. Njoku later in the draft, Vance McDonald, Mark Andrews, Delanie Walker, Hockenson, Jordan Reed's a good early placeholder if you want to get him, you know, combined with a young guy. There are a lot of good ways, in my opinion, to tackle the tight end spot this year, but, you know, really love the top three guys. And if they, I think my most likely way to attack the top three is if one of them sneaks into that mid to late third round area. You know, instead of reaching for one of those backs that I don't want, I take a safe tight end. I can see myself doing that several times. Keenan Allen's next up. We know what we're getting with Keenan. Very solid mid to late wide receiver one for fantasy. I think you're going to get those stats as long as he stays healthy. Kerryon Johnson's a guy I've moved up slightly with the Theo Riddick news, but it's really more that I now know I need to go a little earlier. I never thought Theo Riddick was a threat to him, to be honest. Theo Riddick belonged to the prior regime, not to the Patricia regime. I think Kerryon Johnson's going to do more than most people think. I am very comfortable with him as my RB2, and I have him ranked as the 13th overall running back. Damian Williams, I've moved him down from where I had him, where he was going to be debuting more like at the turn, maybe even late second round. Now I've got him early third. You know, where I value him is going to have a lot to do with whether this hamstring proves to be just a little tweak or something that's actually going to keep him off the field for a while. The minute he's back at practice, I'm going to start sliding him up. Marlon Mack, I think, is solid where I have him ranked, but I do think some people are overestimating what he'll do as a receiver. Ertz, we talked about. Aaron Jones, love Aaron Jones' ability, but he has proven to be a little flaky. He's had some drug stuff in the past. We are in a new offense, so I'm not, and he's also got a tweaked hamstring. So I'm not leaning in on Jones at the minute, at this very moment, but I may start soon. Adam Thielen, obviously love the player. Feel like the volume's going to be okay, but I do think that the, you know, weeks, say, 1 through 8-ish last year, I do think there was some fool's gold volume in there that we have to see as such. Derrick Henry, another back who's moved down my board a little bit based on him being in a walking boot. The word is that the walking boot is not a big deal and that he should be back at practice at some point. Once he is back at practice, he will probably move up a little bit. Or at the very least, I'm going to be more comfortable taking him where he's ranked. T.Y. Hilton, love T.Y. I think he's a good bet to stay in that high-end wide receiver two or even light wide receiver one area. And I think the fact that they have more bodies on hand this year, they won't have to wear him out as they've done in the past. Hopefully we'll see more downfield Hilton and a little bit less of that low A dot near the line of scrimmage Hilton. Amari Cooper, you know, is a guy I've always liked him. I've never loved him. And when he was left for dead last year, I didn't leave him for dead. I sort of was wondering why everybody was overreacting. And now I'm sort of back in that. I'm a little bit lower than consensus on him because I think if you looked at what he did for the Cowboys, it really wasn't as impressive as a lot of people think it was. A lot of it was on really broken plays, defensive mistakes, defenders falling down. His statistics are souped up on a couple of big plays. I'd like to see more of the grinding 15-yard receptions, timing routes. And most of my, you know, trepidation here has really little to do with Amari, who, again, I think is good. I just feel like Dak Prescott, in terms of throwing the football, in terms of seeing the field, being a timing thrower, he's not as good as people think he is. I still think he's got a long, you know, a good long-term future ahead of him, but I think Dak's improvements have been less than we have wanted each year. I feel like the fact that they have him doing so much keeps him sometimes from being a better anticipatory quarterback. And, you know, the Dallas offense doesn't help Dak at all. They're static. Defenders know what's happening before it happens. I don't want to throw all of this on Dak Prescott. Some of it, I think, lands at the feet of the coaching staff. But, you know, it is what it is. So, you know, I like Amari as a solid wide receiver too. But I need to see something from Dallas scheme-related to encourage me to move him up higher. And by the way, with Kellen Moore now running that offense, maybe we see that. So I'm going to be looking closely in preseason. Maybe we'll see some things that will encourage us, although most likely we'll see typical vanilla stuff. Now, last two guys we're going to talk about are Fournette and Freeman. Oh, my God. Now, this is where, like, the least two enjoyable ones I'm saving for last. Both of these guys killed me last year. So, you know, full disclosure, maybe I'm letting last year's pain color this year's rankings a little bit with these two players. But in all honesty, I'm pretty good about forgetting the past. And my concern about Fournette isn't that he hurt me last year. It's that he got hurt last year himself, that he's already had a hamstring tweak this year. And when he got healthy last year, he got his ass suspended before he could help teams. He's not a smart person. He's not a guy who keeps himself in phenomenal condition. You know, the thing that makes me want to lean in is there's not a lot of competition, and he is playing for his future. Hopefully this guy gets his act together. I think he's a compelling value, but there's a reason he's so far down the rankings. He's really a guy to watch, and I hate the word, but I use it sometime, for vibes. Vibes are big on this guy for August. If the team's feeling good about him, if he's practicing every day, if we see him running well in preseason, it's going to force him up my board. Freeman, same kind of problem, except I don't think he's a bad dude. I think Devontae's a guy who's a small back, who he got a lot of volume early in his career, and when you look at the volume trend, it's really bad. So can he buck the trend? Sure. Could he finally have a healthy year? Sure. If he does have that year, is he going to be a huge value for fantasy? Probably. But you got a really tough opening schedule, and you've got a guy who, for me, he needs to prove that he's healthy. So right now, I've got my eyes on Devontae Freeman very closely, and I want to see as much as I can of him in preseason. I want to hear that he's running well. I want to know that he's taking a lot of reps in practice. I want to know that the Falcons feel good about him, and if they do, I will start bumping him up a little bit. And folks, that's a real quick walkthrough of the top 36. So we've got stuff coming up over the next week or so. I'm going to have an article. You know, as I went through my rankings, I grinded a little bit on every coordinator play caller change that's out there. I'm going to do a brief article. It's not super in-depth. You know, it's not an X's and O's extravaganza for each one, especially since some of these guys, we can only take guesses at what they're going to be like. They're, you know, coming from quarterback jobs and tight end jobs. I mean, some of this stuff is interesting. But I think More importantly than nailing each scheme in advance, it's important to understand where the flux is. Even if we can't tell you exactly how a coach is going to coach, we can point out that we got a scheme change here, and that these players aren't being coached by the same people as last year, and that's important stuff to know. So we're just going to walk through, make sure that everybody knows where the scheme changes are, and you know, hopefully that can stay, you know, in your conscious mind when you're working through your rankings and drafts, and so on and so forth. So we're going to have that article. I'm going to have some stuff coming up at EEI. Jim Hacken and I will be live again this Sunday. Had a nice show last Sunday. Our energy was there, but we're going to be getting more into the nuts and bolts of drafting each episode as we work our way into drafting season. So they're going to have podcasts next week. Sigmund Bloom hopefully will be on the pod next week. Elliot Crist coming up soon after that. I'm already in negotiations with Adam Hardstadt. Hopefully we'll get Adam on soon, and a whole bunch of other fun people. So really enjoying the way things are going at Rotobahn right now. My energy is up. Hopefully you guys can sense it. I'm really looking forward to drafts. I've got the King of the Hill draft coming up with Scott Fish. I will post results from that draft on the site so you guys can see what I'm doing in best ball for August. And, you know, I'm actually on August 11th. I'm headed up for the Beantown Brawl draft with the Fantasy Football Engineer and Pete Overzet and Pat Thorman, Russell Clay, Jim Hackett, me, a bunch of other really smart drafters. The Fantasy Father is going to be in there. And I will also post the results from that draft. So lots of good stuff coming. Fantasy football season, man. It doesn't get any better. And the Rotobomb podcast is locked in now. And the last thing I'm going to say, please, if you can, remember to drop a vote and a comment. It means a lot. Really appreciate it. So we'll see you soon, probably in a couple days. Definitely going to see you on Sunday morning. And we'll have at minimum two podcasts next week, one with just me and one with Sigmund Bloom. Thanks for listening, everybody.